With the pandemic over the last 2 years accelerating digital adoption, some might argue that digital strategy is no longer a challenge for charities. But with the 2021 Charity Digital Skills Report showing that 40% of charities still don't have a digital strategy, there's clearly work to do. And just as importantly, for the 60% who have developed a digital strategy, some might be finding it hard to implement. The changing funding landscape and rising levels of demand for charity services might mean that strategy needs revisiting. And there might be some changes to key technologies and suppliers that are forcing an update. In today's podcast, we're aiming to be of help whether you're just starting out with your digital strategy or looking to evolve it to be more relevant and impactful for your charity. I'm Jonathan Chevalier, and I'm hosting this podcast as part of our Digital Transformation Week. And I'm delighted to be joined by Lara Burns, Chief Digital Officer of the Scouts, and Zoe Ammer, founder of Zoe Ammer Digital and the chair of the charity Digital Code. Let's start by going back to basics. Lara, what is a digital strategy?
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's always one of those things that people think is really obvious. And then when people say, what is it? Then you go, well, for me, part of it is actually a document, and that sounds really tedious and dull. It's a short document, but it is a statement. And I think for me, that's the key bit. It's a statement about what our intentions are. So it's kind of got a vision, a mission statement. What our objectives are, so some of the key deliverables that we're actually going to want to do as part of our strategy, the roadmap. What things are going to look different? What things are going to look like differently once we've delivered our strategy? And for me, it's also about explaining to the organization why it needs a digital strategy. So part of it is kind of my argument that I might use to board, for instance, to say, this is why I need this much money or this many people or whatever it is. So it's an articulation of our plans, really.
Yes. Yeah. Let's bring you in on that as well, Zoe. Why is it so important for a charity to have a digital strategy?
I think Lara's point about having a statement of intent and a shared understanding about where you're going and what you're going to do to get there and what you're not going to do to get there is a really important one. And for me, the core ingredients, very much as Lara said, should consist of having that North Star, so what that vision is, what some of the outcomes are as well. And then ideally something about the principles that you're going to use to make decisions, whether that's within the strategy itself or the subsequent work that comes in phase two and phase three. And in terms of what it looks like, I mean, often, exactly as Zara said, it does end up being a document. But I'm fairly agnostic, to be honest. I mean, it could be on a beer mat. It could be on a spreadsheet, it could be a PowerPoint document. I don't really mind whether it's like that or indeed whether it's a standalone strategy or within the organisational strategy itself. But someone somewhere in the organisation needs to lead the conversation about it and bring the key stakeholders together to reach that shared understanding about what it is and where we're all going with digital.
Great, that's really helpful. So that's kind of told us a bit more about what a digital strategy is and why is it important. But it's easier said than done. What is the actual best process for producing that digital strategy? Who wants to go for that? Lara?
I think it really depends on the organisation you're in. And obviously Zoe's got a great experience across lots of different organisations. What's worked for me, and maybe that's also about my leadership approach, but I tend to have written the document as a starting point. And then I'll have consulted with, for instance, I've got a digital program board, so I will consult with them and ensure that I haven't missed anything, that the language that I'm using makes sense. But I think quite often it needs someone to start something. And I think the danger sometimes of being too consultative is, particularly when you're talking about digital, a lot of people say to me, well, I don't know what I don't know. That's your job, isn't it? So I think if you try and consult too widely with too many people, particularly people who aren't that clear on what digital is, then you're not necessarily going to get very far, but definitely some kind of consultation is helpful because it helps you land it, as Zoe was saying, and it helps people buy into it.
So if you're that person who's writing the first draft or something, where should you start? What do you put down?
Yeah, I mean, I would say it has to start from your organizational strategy, really, because for me, digital is basically about enabling what the organization is there to do. So it's got to be, it's got to come from that, and it's got to underpin the organizational strategy. There's no point in me, for instance, going off and going on about, I don't know, AI and some robotics thing, because that's doesn't relate at all at the moment to the Scouts organizational strategy. So it's totally irrelevant. So that's the starting point for me, really.
And Zoe, what are the main pitfalls to avoid in developing that digital strategy? Because I think there probably are plenty of them, aren't there?
Yeah, the number one thing that's very much top of mind for me at the moment is having that realistic sense of where your ambition is deliverable on your capacity to do it. And what I quite often see in my role is where there's a bit of a mismatch. So Laura, just as you mentioned there about robotics, sometimes we talk to organisations who've got huge ambitions around digital, but actually a very small budget or a very small team to do it. And sometimes I see it the other way around as well. People aren't as ambitious as they could be. And then there's a question there about why existing resource isn't delivering in the way that it could. So I think that's one of the first things, actually, to really get that sort of best fit between, well, in fact, even just that shared understanding of what we want to achieve and how ambitious people are and how hungry they are for change versus where you currently are. What's that sort of current state and where you're at in terms of your existing resources and where there may be some flex within that as well to change that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Zoe, actually, because I think the danger sometimes particularly is to not be ambitious enough. And you know, I've always seen my role, and I think quite often digital people are quite often the people coming in a bit left field and saying, well, we could do this, we could put a knowledge base in, we could put a chatbot into our information center, you know, and quite often some other digital stuff can be quite threatening. But I think it is really important that we are being ambitious and innovative, because, you know, that's part of our overall mission, I see, as digital people. But I think it is hard sometimes. I mean, so again, sometimes, you know, I said, let's, you know, put it within the context of the organizational strategy. But I think it's also important to put it in the context of the external environment. And if that means going out and chatting to a few other people who are writing digital strategies in the sector, not necessarily even just in the charity sector, but wider, you know, for me, that's really important, because it's often been conversations with other people that I've been going thinking, oh yeah, actually maybe I should be thinking about that as well. Maybe not now, but maybe I need to at least put that on my roadmap for a few years' time. And I think that's really, really important. And I agree, it's quite a balance, because if you're so ambitious and you're never going to have the budget to do it, then, you know, that's just sort of setting false expectations.
I agree with that. And I'm going to say something a bit controversial now. I think you do need to link your ambition in some way to what makes you really unique as an organisation, and dreaded phrase, what gives you competitive advantage. So one way to test that is if you take the name of your charity out of the strategy and just look through it and see whether it truly does sound like you and what genuinely does make you unique as an organization. That's a good way to see whether you're really playing to that sweet spot of what makes you truly different and truly special, because otherwise it could just be another mental health charity is sort of improving these things, and that will take you some way, but it will only take you so far.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's, I'm going to go back and look at mine then. That's a bit scary.
Yeah, I think we should all try that from time to time, really. Keeps us true and honest, doesn't it? I want to look a little bit as well at what the barriers to the deployment of a successful digital strategy are. Do you have any thoughts there, Zoe?
Underinvestment, I think, is one of the things I often see. And again, I think this is so hard in the charity sector. We've all got less money to play with. And also, I think a lot of charities at the moment are doing a lot of catch up. And that actually is the right thing to do. Because I always say to people, there's no point trying to build an infinity pool or a roof terrace on your house if the foundations are leaking. You've got to put the foundations in. And of course, catch-up can be quite costly and quite expensive. So I think really investing properly, really doing all the groundwork to invest, and making sure that you've got really rock solid business cases, you've done your procurement really properly as well. That's something that I'd really like to see be developed further across the sector.
Yeah, if I could just come in there, though, I think that's a really good point, Zoe. But I think what sometimes I see people doing is they're focusing on the basics, and they think that means let's just forget about digital stuff for a while. Whereas I would argue that actually, if you can flip things around and think about, okay, how is doing something digitally going to help me with this thing? So I don't know whether that's about fundraising or looking after your volunteers or looking after your staff or whatever it is. You know, we all know that actually with digital stuff, you can make, you know, efficiencies. You can hopefully reach more people much more effectively with less work. I think it's also about flipping it slightly. So if you are planning as an organization some of those basic things, asking yourself that question of, okay, well, if I can bring a little bit of digital in to this thing to help me, how is that going to move us forward? And actually, I think for me, by doing more things in a digital way at the start, so being digital first is how I describe it in my strategy, you're actually therefore enabling digital transformation along the way. And actually sometimes it's quite beneficial because people don't actually realize you're doing it by stealth along the way anyway. But I totally agree. I think investment is really key. And in all my roles when I've worked in the charity sector doing this sort of stuff, it's always that continual kind of argument, pushing upwards, asking for more money, sometimes being told no. And I really get that. It is really, really hard. But I think, you know, again, it's about being brave as a digital leader. And when you're talking to other people in the organization, making it really clear about what that ambition is going to cost. Because I think often people sign up to the ambition. They're like, great, I'd love that. I can't wait to go and wave this at my trustees or whatever. And then you go, oh yeah, and by the way, XXX is the price tag. And everyone's like, gulp. You know, and I just think, you know, you can't have one without the other. You know, you can't have your fancy new roof terrace, for instance, without a substantial, you know, price tag on it. And that is, it digital costs money. Good digital investment costs money, either in the actual tech or in the resources. And I think if you don't plan those in, you're just going to fail from the start.
No, I think you make a really great point there, really. I'm kind of thinking of the types of organizations who maybe plan from year to year, and each year they kind of go, right, how can we handle a 10% increase next year? And it's kind of like, well, we'll just tune this a little bit and ask for a little bit more money and we can do it. But obviously, with the power of compounding, after a few years, that 10% increase means that you've doubled the number you're trying to handle. If you'd started out by saying, well, how am I going to handle double the number of people with my services, you'd probably come up with a very different answer to going, well, we'll just tune here and there and ask for a little bit more money each year. So that sometimes I think actually having that ambition can actually lead you to the breakthrough thinking that you won't get from year to year incremental thinking.
Yeah, I think that's true. And the other thing that I've definitely made that mistake myself is it's very easy to make the investment case for the initial stuff. So, for instance, the big new membership system development, the big new website development, whatever it is. And I think what people often forget to do for themselves, like I have done, or they forget to message really clearly to directors or boards or whatever, is the kind of ongoing BAU costs. So, you know, we all know you don't just put a website in anymore and then go, right, that's it, we're done for the next few years. We all know that actually it needs to be continually looked after. It needs continual resource, continual development. And it's really important that you manage that message and you make sure that you budget accordingly, whether that's sort of moving from capital budget to operational budget, which is how we would do it, but just making sure it's there and it's not suddenly a surprise in 3 years' time when you finish the big project and then you say, oh yeah, but I still need this money year on year. And I've had people go, well, what do you mean? We thought you'd have finished that budget. And you go, no, that was just the start. So for me, that is one of the really big things, to sort of the gotchas that I've certainly learnt to my cost.
Yeah, have you got any kind of, I guess, tips or suggestions as to how people kind of keep that balance? Because, you know, you don't want to be in an environment where you're not doing anything new. You're just spending all of your effort maybe on maintenance. But at the same time, if you're just doing the new stuff and forgetting to maintain what's already there, then you're probably going to have a problem pretty soon as well. So how should charities manage that balance?
Yeah, I think it's a big problem actually facing the sector at the moment, how we get that balance right between catch up and innovation. And I think a really good way to do it is to create some spaces for your team and also for the digital team, if you've got one, or whoever's leading on digital, to come together with the leadership team and the board specifically to think about that. And that's where I'd be looking at building in some fairly regular horizon scanning when you can. And when I say horizon scanning, that can literally be 20 minutes once a month in a team meeting where you have a chat about, well, what trends have you seen recently that you think might be especially relevant for our charity 6-12 months from now? And then maybe doing a bit of workshopping with your senior management team to start to plan for how these things could begin to impact you, even if it's not for 2 years or something. So making that time to really think about the future as much as the very pressing issues of today is absolutely the balance that I see in the best digital teams out there.
Yeah, that's a great point. I want to take a couple of minutes to just reflect on what's happened over the last few years. As I said at the outset, it's obviously been a period of pretty intense digital deployment for a lot of organisations. What for each of you are the main learnings that you take out of that period in terms of both our current and our future digital strategies?
Yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of digital people, it's actually been, ironically, a kind of hugely exciting, creative time, because I think it's put a lot of digital people in the space where they act best. You know, they can be creative, they have to work quickly. No one's questioning the fact that they've got to work quickly. They've been able to do things on the fly. And I think a lot of digital people have like, great, I love this stuff. So for me, I guess it's sort of learning about, What did you do really well? Like, what's the stuff that you want to keep doing more of? So if that is about being able to be really agile and flexible, like, how can you capture that and keep that going as we start to go back to a more sort of maybe a bit slower pace? And I think for me, the other thing is about how you use your teams and your resources, whether you've got small teams, big teams, whether you haven't really got a team, but you have to just work with lots of people doing bits of digital across the organization. You know, we've done a mixture of both of those things in the last 2 years, but I think it's, again, it's being really mindful of what you've achieved in the last couple of years with your people, whatever that people, those groups of people look like. And again, you know, what's worked brilliantly, what hasn't worked so well, and how can you learn from that? For me, it is really about learning and reviewing. And I think especially when you come out of a period of where we've probably all just like kept going as fast as we can and reacted lots of different ways, I think now's the time to sort of be able to review a bit and think, okay, what have I learned from that? And what would I do the same? What would I do differently? And how might I take that into a slightly different phase that we're going into now? I don't know what you think, Zoe.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that time for reflection and digital teams really showing how they're at the heart of that learning about users is really important for demonstrating where they add value. And Laura, I know your team are really, really good at that, which is great. I think some of my main reflections from the last couple of years is, firstly, the sector is way more innovative than it probably would have said it was back in January 2020. We've all seen so much innovation, so much pivoting, people doing things differently, happening right across the sector, and some very exciting stuff happening, just as you said, Laura, which I think is great. And we need to keep flexing that muscle and also thinking about how we've done it as well and drawing on those learnings. So I was with a charity that we would probably describe as quite institutional, quite a traditional organisation earlier this week. And we were talking about where they had innovated over the last couple of years, but they wouldn't have called it innovation. They would just have called it adapting to the crisis. So finding some examples of that and learning from them is really important. Skills, obviously, they're the big challenge of right now, because it's so hard to find really good digital talent. I think we're going to have to keep thinking creatively about how we do that and possibly revise some of our plans as organisations in that area as well until the labour market starts to perhaps stabilise a bit. And then the third point, which feels especially pertinent at the moment, is this kind of gear change moment we're in right now, as we start to get back to normal, whatever that means. And the reason why I mention that is because I see so many charities right now who've really got the bit between their teeth around digital transformation and change, which is great. And I love to see that energy and all of that good stuff happening. I think we all know that there is, you know, very understandably, a lot of people who are low on energy, they're feeling really burnt out, they probably had a very traumatic last couple of years. So how we balance that pace of change and that momentum versus how we support staff is something where I think we may need to take the pace back down a little bit, but ultimately we'll be able to achieve more in the long run.
Yeah, I really echo that. I think, you know, it's easy, isn't it? And this isn't just really about digital, it's about anything, but it's easy to just keep wanting to keep going and then thinking, actually, just some of the pause, some of the reflection, some of the learning, actually we'll be in a better place if we slow down a bit. And I think you're right also about the skills thing. I've been doing quite a lot of thinking about that myself recently. So we're trying to put quite a lot of work in actually about into digital skills in our staff teams, but also in our volunteers. So, you know, there's sort of 150,000 volunteers that basically make scouting happen. And, you know, for me, that's really, really important. And I think sometimes you forget the kind of how rather than the what. So, you know, everyone's focusing on their big digital projects, and they've got kind of often pretty big clear deliverables at the end of them, so you kind of know when you're done. I think my argument is always, you know, and I'm sure Zoe has, we've had lots of conversations about this over the years, but, you know, like without digital skills, then we're not going to get anywhere really. And I can never grow my digital team, however many resources I get, to the extent that I need in order to achieve a transformation across a massive UK-wide organisation. The only way I'm going to do that is by helping to uplift gradually skills in every single person. So for me, that's a really big challenge, and it's a really big thing that I think we all should be focusing on now, because we're just not going to achieve those ambitions if we don't do that. And sometimes it's really minuscule changes that we need to make, and it's partly about, it's about confidence as much as skill, isn't it? But, you know, with lots of little changes, with lots of people, you can actually achieve a massive amount. And it doesn't always need to have a budget attached. You know, more people doing more stuff, you can actually achieve more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the things I often hear talked about in digital, and I'm sure you're proponents of this as well, is the kind of learning by experimenting and iterating. But I also see a kind of a bit of a trap here, because I've seen organizations who exhibit what I call butterfly-like behavior. So they flip from thing to thing, never kind of focusing on one thing long enough to deliver the full benefits. So how how do we balance that need to have a kind of a strategy which gives a clear roadmap with, at the same time, the desire to iterate and learn from doing and be able to pivot at the right time as well? Feels like a real tension to me. Maybe Zoe, start with you on that.
Yeah, I do see this, definitely. And I don't think it's an either or. The organisations where I have seen that happen is where you don't have that oversight. There isn't that good, perhaps, or slightly weaker sort of accountability and governance around digital. And that's where people are just going off and doing stuff. And unfortunately, it drifts into what I would call hobbyism. So actually, I would look in that situation at maybe taking a step back again and looking at the learnings and saying, well, there are these three outcomes we want to see, and we're only going to give the green light even to tests on projects that are going to contribute to learning about these outcomes. And then if you aren't doing something in that area, then don't do it, because it's actually not serving a purpose for the business. So you need to be quite ruthless about why you're making decisions and how you're making decisions. Otherwise, I completely agree, it can just go off and become interesting things to do rather than something that's contributing to social change and your vision and mission.
I guess it comes back to our original question, which was, you know, why do you need a digital strategy in the first place? If you've articulated well what you're trying to do, and as Zoe said, the outcomes you're trying to reach, everything should be measured against that. And I think it helps with prioritization. And you know, it does mean that sometimes, particularly as a digital technology team, you're having to say no to people because, you know, people get all excited and they want to do this and I want to do that. And you have to say, well, no, it doesn't really fit with what we're here to do. And, you know, and I see that as part of our role, really. But, you know, again, it's about good use of your charity's money, isn't it? You cannot be spending money where it's not needed. So I think when it comes down to it, that's quite often the argument I use, and it usually solves things fairly quickly. But I do think that, again, it comes back to that how you work. So, you know, you can introduce innovative ways of working and test and learn within cycles of programs of any kind of projects throughout the organization. And I think if you can introduce that mindset, which I, you know, is what I would kind of call a digital mindset, you can do that with anything. And I think that helps people feel fresh. It helps them feel like they're innovating and learning and being creative. But, you know, it's not them just going off and doing the classic argument, oh, I think we could do an app. You know, everyone in digital usually does a big sigh when they hear that. But, you know, you can show people that they can be creative and innovative in different ways. It isn't necessarily about coming up with a new techie thing.
Good. Now, we've had some really brilliant conversation, covered a lot of ground. So we've really just got time for one last question. I think it'd be good to end just by saying, for each of you, what would your top tip be for someone developing or implementing a digital strategy? Start with you, Zoe.
My mantra is always execution, 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 which is not to say go straight to the operational side of things. But that should be something that's in the back of your head as a watchword for success. So you always need to be thinking about how can we make sure this isn't just going to be a document that sits on a server somewhere? How are we actually going to enact this? How are we going to create some good oversight, some accountability around doing that? How does this match to our resources and all that stuff that we've talked about today?
Lara, what would you add?
I love that. I was probably going to be the one that was the sort of delivery focused one. So I'm going to flip. Sorry. I would just say be brave and be creative. You know, I think if you're creating a digital strategy, it's the really exciting point where you don't. You know, you're not going into the detail of how and what and when and where. You obviously need that, as Zoe said, but, you know, be brave, be creative, come up with something inspirational, be that aspirational person. I think that's what a strategy should be about. It should be exciting, and it needs to be exciting to get your team behind it, to get, you know, trustees behind it, to get directors behind it. So yeah, kind of be brave and grasp it and go for it, I would say.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. We've had a fantastic conversation there, covered so much ground, and you've both brought such a diversity of experience with you that I'm sure our listeners have found that fascinating. So thank you very much to Lara and Zoe, and goodbye from me.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.